Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. Well, we're ready. It is Saturday, the 5th of this of January, Anno Domini 2019. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get to lose. Here comes the news. Steve Ray is, of course, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. Hiding amongst the mesas and badlands.
Yes, and all the indigenous animals in that area.
Exactly right.
Enjoying the low humidity.
Bears. Oh, no.
That's basically lizards and cacti.
Yeah, not much.
Pretty much
That's
it.
What
I've heard. I've been there. Well, excuse me. The beginning of 2019 isn't proving to be as fruitful, get it, as Apple anticipated.
There it is. Nice one.
CEO Tim Cook released a letter to investors on Wednesday that revised the company's guidance for its first quarter 2019 performance. Apple now expects a minimum of $84 billion in revenue, down from $89 billion projected at the end of the last fiscal year. In response to the news, Apple stock fell 8% in after-hours trading and remains down since. Only Apple could say they're going to make $84 billion in 3 months.
Guys, did I say 89?
That's terrible.
Did I say 89 billion? What I meant was 84 billion. What? That's horrible. I'm out.
That's exactly right. So what happened? Cook cited a number of factors, including the timing of the newest iPhone launches and supply constraints across product accessories, categories. The new iPhone XS, excuse me, XS.
XS.
It is an XS. It is an XS
well,
phone.
A case could be made, yes.
The XS Max and the XR began shipping in fourth quarter 2018, leading to fewer sales to be counted in the first quarter of 2019. As for supply issues, the letter claims that sales of Apple Watch Series 4, iPad Pro, AirPods, and MacBook Air were all constrained during much or all of the quarter. But the biggest problems come from lackluster sales in China and equally disappointing iPhone upgrades. Cook wrote that the magnitude of the economic deceleration in Greater China took Apple by surprise, resulting in much of its revenue decline. In fact, most of our revenue shortfall to our guidance and over 100% of our year-over-year worldwide revenue decline occurred in Greater China across iPhone, Mac, and iPad, Cook wrote in the letter. Cook also cited the trade war between the U.S. and China as another factor. Since trade tensions don't appear to be lessening anytime soon, this spells trouble for Apple and other companies that make a lot of money from the Chinese market. While China's economy is undoubtedly a big challenge for Apple, possibly more challenging in the long run will be users' attitudes towards smartphone upgrades. Cook named weak iPhone upgrades as a major contributing factor to this quarter's slump. While a number of things can influence a user's decision to upgrade their smartphone, Cook cited Apple's significantly reduced iPhone battery replacements as one reason to have chosen to some have chosen to stick with current models. The industry as a whole has had to deal with declining smartphone sales for a while now, and Apple isn't immune to that trend. But other vendors, like Samsung, have fairly low exposure in China, so the China slump has hit Apple the hardest. All is not doom and gloom, however. In his letter, Cook also pointed out a bright spot for Apple. Its services division, which includes the App Store, iCloud, and Apple Music, continue to grow. As with a video streaming service rumored to debut sometime this year, Apple is quickly laying the groundwork to reinvent itself as a services company rather than an iPhone factory. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple stock plummets 8% on news of grim Q1 2019 outlook. And your choices are they'll pop back soon enough, just one more bit of economic bad news, there goes my retirement, and meh. So far we've had 29 votes and meh is significantly in the lead. I know you'll have much more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under the four, under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under the poll discussion is 5 January 19, Apple stock plummets 8% on news of grim Q1 2019 outlook.
Well,
and of course, you can join us here. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
We've been saying this for months, though, so they shouldn't be shocked. I mean, Apple, just like PCs, you're seeing fewer and fewer of them in stores.
Yep.
I mean, the models. I mean, Steve used to sit here, it seemed like every other month, talking about a new model PC. Now they're down to phones, tablets, and maybe a few laptops here and there. Not many. As far as the desktop world, that's gone away for the most part. You don't hear any big things. Oh, we're bringing out this model desktop and that one that you're going to need this screen and all that other stuff. It's gotten smaller. And the same with the PC side. And that's been going on for over a year and a half. You can go into most stores nowadays. You see very few desktops. You will see laptops. You will see tablets. And you will see phones.
Well, Apple assumed they were immune to all of that because they have a built-in audience. They have a built-in base. There are people who will never buy anything except Apple.
Yeah.
And they're assuming that those people are going to just keep on buying the new product year after year. This year, we see that what they've mostly done is bought new batteries for their old phones and not bought new phones. And apparently, that shocked them. Somebody actually bought a $29 battery instead of a $900 phone, and that surprised Apple.
Well, again, how many other features can be done in a phone? And I don't care whether it's on Android side or the Mac side.
Right. Our phone's maturing in their capabilities to the point where it's more difficult to add new things and to make those seem very attractive to potential customers.
Right. There's no wow factor anymore. It's like, well, we changed the icons.
Okay. But the biggest factor, and it's turning people off, and they want to stay with their own phones, and this is, again, true for the Mac side and the PC side, or the Android side, is they keep focused on, getting thinner. Hello? Yeah. With thinner is less battery life. And if I've got an older phone, again, doesn't matter which manufacturer, that's got a bigger battery and it's lasting me longer.
And a replaceable battery.
Yeah. Why would I want to go to something that's thinner and, costs me a lot more money and doesn't last as long?
That's right.
Hello? You know, for those few millimeters, which we talked about just last week, is stupid to say, it's 3 millimeters thinner. You put a case on it usually anyways.
That's right.
So, yeah, there's a few things involved there. The engineers want to have a unique challenge to deal with. So trying to come up with something thinner means that they get to exercise their mind and try to produce something that's thinner. And that's great until you stop thinking like a customer and stop thinking like somebody who's actually going to use it and stop designing it, not for your eyes, but for your life and how it gets used. So the challenge really ought to be, how do I make this a device that makes people get more done? Or helps people improve their life, or that solves a problem for them.
Right.
And what I'm seeing right now is not engineers. What I'm seeing is fashion designers.
Yep.
People that want to make something that looks great in a photo shoot, but when you go to use it, where'd my battery life go? And
well, when you think Apple, you think two names, not Steve Jobs anymore. You think Tim Cook.
Sure.
And Johnny Ive.
Yep. Premium products.
But Johnny Ive is not really an engineer. He's a designer.
He's an industrial designer.
Right.
Yes, industrial design, I'd say probably since the late 90s with the original iMac, has been a very strong part of Apple's capabilities and sensibilities.
Right.
And the internal engineering, I don't think gets as much, all the what I call the WAS stuff. All the internal engineering and the micro E that goes into this is never given quite as much fanfare, in my opinion. They talk about it a little bit, but then they talk about the details. They don't talk about why that's great.
The other issue that Apple, I think, has is they cannibalize their own product lines.
They do. They feel like they want to cannibalize their stuff before somebody else does it.
I suppose.
We saw that for decades with the iPod when it first came out. And Steve was the Steve Jobs was the first person to say, I want us to be the people who customers look to see what's next, what's the next thing.
Right.
And truth be told, so much of the technology industry, especially the consumer level technology industry, is all about, hey, what's the new next shiny thing? What can it do? And the, you and I, we've all been around long enough to remember the progression of technology in the 70s, 80s, and 90s was just absolutely phenomenal. The difference that you saw year to year in performance, in capabilities, and the way prices would drop made a machine from 2 years ago completely obsolete.
Right.
And what we're seeing now is kind of a trending towards tailing off of that. The performance gains have been incremental. And the capability growth has been very good, but it's always been in new form factors. So we saw desktops rise, then we saw laptops get more capable, longer battery life, more performance. Then we saw phones get better. We saw tablets come along. We're seeing wearables now. And I think as we move into smaller and smaller and smaller form factors, you're going to see that this cycle will tend to repeat itself. So It's all about what's going to be the next thing. Is it going to be glasses? Or is it going to be some other wearable? Is it going to be tech that goes into your car or something else?
Right. But then again, when we talk about Apple cannibalizing themselves, where are the iPods? They've been replaced.
They melted into the iPhone.
Right. They've been replaced by the iPhone. So there's an entire product line that Apple can't sell anymore.
Well, they don't sell it.
Desktops. What about laptops? Let's take a look at these laptops. Apple themselves are saying you can do almost everything you want to do on an iPad.
Yeah. I think about this the same way. I wasn't truly aware of the situation between the Apple II and the Mac in the early 80s, just due to my age.
Right.
And
you were four.
Slightly older, but not much. And I tend to think this is probably what that was like. The Apple II people versus the Mac people is probably a lot like the macOS people versus the iOS people now.
Yep.
The Apple is kind of split into two worlds, and they are each trying to make sure that they are both relevant. And I think that there's probably a little bit of internal tension there, but Apple is doing their best to try and smooth over that difference and accentuate the differences when it matters in terms of portability. But if you look at the raw Geekbench numbers for the newest iPad, they are through the roof. It's amazing. And it's amazing how many of their desktop and laptop machines are totally stomped on by the performance of the newest iPad.
Exactly. And that's a problem that Apple has, and they brought it on themselves. They don't differentiate their product lines. They cannibalize their own stuff. They encroach on their own territory. And I get it. They're different divisions, and Apple's always been, you know, survival of the fittest. And so if your division can't cut it, too bad. I get that.
Sure.
I mean, that's all Steve Jobs.
Right.
I get that. But what it translates to in the real world is Apple's cannibalizing their own stuff. And that's I think, a problem. Look at what Google is doing now with this new operating system called Fuchsia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They have a new operating system. It's still in very early beta. It could be just late alpha, if you want to look at it that way.
Right.
Called Fuchsia. And it is designed, essentially, it will run on any platform. So it's going to replace Chrome OS, Android.
Okay.
You can run it on a desktop. You can run it on a laptop. You can run it on a tablet. You can run it on a phone. You can run it on your fingernail. I don't care what it is.
Okay.
But that's Fuchsia, and that's their next thing. So what they're trying to do is homogenize their market. So now it depends entirely on you which form factor makes you happy. As opposed to, you have to make a clear delineation. Do you want a laptop or do you want a tablet?
Right. Well, I think that comes down to where do the companies make their money? And I think so much of Google is making their money through advertising. So
Right.
Their goal is to put a screen in front of everybody.
Right.
Apple is a little bit different.
We're going to take a quick break.
Oh. All right, we'll just sit here and
you overtalked it. Okay.
My bad. I'm so used to... I'm still in the old mode.
Hang on, I'm rocking the cash bar over here.
No, I'm so... I apologize. I was thinking, you know, how we used to do the 20 and the 40.
Yeah.
And I forgot. New year, new mind.
Okay, so as I was saying...
Yeah.
Please continue.
First, let us apologize for Dave's age.
That's okay. You can dance along at home, people.
Brain fart. I said, oh, wait, we're late for the break. And I forgot. Yeah. Oh, no, he changed.
Well, we do trust you to keep us on time, and we do thank you for that.
Yes.
So
it can be a challenge sometimes.
So I think where I was going was,
yeah,
Google makes all their money from advertising. Their goal is to show you some search results, show you your email, show you your photos, all the other things that they can, and sell ads against it. And that's a very modern method for handling that through the web. Apple doesn't make as much of their money from that. They make a lot of their money from the hardware. They're starting to make more and more money from the services that they provide, the iCloud services and subscription music and subscription video. So it's interesting to see how they're different. And I think that kind of drives their approach. So when it comes to hardware, I've always really enjoyed Apple's hardware in general. I've always liked their OS, but I've always really liked their hardware. So even to the point where I've run other OSs on Apple hardware,
sure,
just because I've really appreciated it. And I still think that they make some of the nicest hardware. I don't think it's the cheapest hardware, but
they make exceptionally good hardware, as a matter of fact.
I think it's probably at the high end of what's available.
Yep.
What I would like to see them do, I think, in general, is to refocus on not just... I need them to take less of a "you will build it and the ideas will come." I would like to see them try and focus and build the best quality what was it that Steve Jobs used to say? Design is not what it looks like. Design is how it works.
Right.
So I want to see more about a smooth interaction. I want to see that, you know, I can use my Apple Pay, you know, on my phone or on my Apple Watch. I want to be able to buy apps with it.
Right.
And today I can't.
Right.
I have a credit card number stored with iTunes because it's been there for 15 years. And I have a credit card number stored with Apple Pay. And they're like two completely different worlds.
Yep.
So I'd like to see some rethinking of some of the assumptions that go into what they've built already, and more integration and less question marks over my head when I try and do somewhat seemingly simple things.
Right. And that's a problem, again, that really came from Steve Jobs. By building that Chinese wall between divisions and making them compete against each other,
right,
there wasn't enough synergy between those divisions to homogenize the product line.
Yeah.
And that's what Google is trying to do. And you're right. It's a very different situation. They don't care who sells the hardware. They don't care what form factor you buy. They just want you to use their operating system.
Put the browser in front of people's eyeballs.
Right. But because of that, they're doing what you want Apple to do. They're looking at making a single product.
Yes.
That runs everything you want to do.
And you have a very similar experience.
Right, so across everything.
So the things you've learned when you're using it on your laptop or on your tablet are the same things that you're going to see and you can use when you've used it on your phone.
That's exactly right. You want to be able to say to somebody, and think about the power of being able to say to somebody, "Oh, I'd like to buy a Chromebook, but I don't know if I can work one." I said, "Do you have an Android phone?" "Yeah." It's the same thing.
You will see it. Different size screen.
But they're the only difference.
That's right. And to that point, the Mac has always been about that consistency in user interface. Even
right.
Going back 20, 25 years ago, the thing that they had going for them back in the early Windows days was that their apps all looked the same.
Yep.
And they did different things, but the interface that you used, the windows, the icons, the mouse, the pointer, all those things had a very consistent user interface and people knew what to expect. And it was always also very discoverable. One of my big complaints about iOS is on a Mac, you can hover a mouse over something and get a tooltip, or yep. You can use the online help and have it next to it. There's no way to hover your finger over something without activating it on a touch screen.
Right.
So there's a lack of discoverability. And that's a human computer interface bug that drives me crazy about iOS.
Actually, you can on some things. I know on Android you can. The problem is hovering is so delicate that you almost never hit the sweet spot.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Apple's had, what do they call it? 3D touch and other things like that. But I think that's been difficult for pro users and almost impossible for the typical consumer to get right.
And as people get older and their hands start to tremble a little bit,
sure,
you're really not going to hit that sweet spot.
Right.
All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Hey, I think I'm number one today, so I'm
you
glad
are.
About that. I'm making history for myself.
Yes,
wonderful.
Indeed, you're number one for the year, and always number one in our hearts, Larry.
Okay, thank you. Got a question. I'm a large format photographer. I know I'm a dinosaur, but I love it, and I still do it.
Why not?
I have an old Palm Pilot that used a piece of software called DoffMaster, Depth of Field, and I still think it's one of the best things out there. And my Palm still works. What I'm trying to do, though, is see if I can get the Palm LE software downloaded to my Mac so that I can plug up the cradle for the Palm and then download the software to the Palm. I found a couple of places. I've even found DoffMaster for the iPhone, but it is nowhere near as good as the old Palm Pilot, as ancient as it is, that piece of software. So just wondering. I found a couple of places looking around, but, you know, you wonder about the age and you wonder about the safety of the site and, you know, things like that.
Sure.
So just kind of wondering if you heard or anything like that or might have any suggestions.
I was about to suggest that there is, in fact, DoffMaster for pretty much every platform, but you're saying it doesn't work the same. And I'll take your word for that. I clearly have never used the software.
Right.
But I know of no way to run a Palm Pilot program
on Mac OS.
On Mac OS.
Yeah, my Palm days are sadly behind me, and there are lots of things about my old Palm 5 that I truly, truly miss. I do see that there is at DoffMaster.com on the website, there is an online depth of field calculator that you might be able to bring up.
Right, and I actually tried that last night on my my iPhone, and it's an online version. But once again, it's almost antiquated compared to the old Palm, where you actually had all the scales and everything, and you could kind of instantly see what you were doing because it's a view camera. You got to calculate everything yourself, which is what I enjoy doing.
Sure. I'm looking at the screenshots of the Palm version here. You're right. It is considerably different and enhanced compared to the stripped-down version that they made for the web.
Right. Now, the web version, if you're looking at your PC, is great, but who calls a PC into the field?
True.
I
was just wondering if you might know of anything offhand. Otherwise, I got to figure out if I'm bold enough to download something from some of these sites onto my PC and then try downloading it. I'm not sure that I am.
Well you can probably trust DoffMaster. It is the official site.
Right. I think that the trick is going to be finding either an emulator or something else that can run that Palm app on your Palm device.
Yeah, and I honestly haven't ever seen anything that's Palm emulator.
Yeah, I looked hard and I haven't. You know, sometimes old is not necessarily worse.
Right.
So I thought I would call this morning and just ask. I've spent a lot of time looking for that. I've got my old Palm on. The only thing I ever really hated about it is when the batteries died, everything died, and you had to reload everything. That was the worst part of it, I think. But other than that, when it's working, it was a sweet little program and a nice little handheld device, and what's out there now doesn't come close. And even when I go to the App Store for iOS, you know, what's out there just doesn't measure up, in my opinion. So
right.
That's what I'm looking for. But thank you for your answers. I'll keep looking, and if necessary, I guess I'll just have to live with the new and modern.
Sorry.
Yeah, the only Palm emulator that I'm able to see is one that is considerably
older. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I wish I knew what to tell you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, guys, and Happy New Year, and continue to do good work.
And you too. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, now we really are going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Wurster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Wurster.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the very first sound bites of 2019.
Woo!
And yes, Steve Ray is not here, so those of you who've been patiently waiting for the YouTube stream to come up, there isn't one this week.
That's... I must remain shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, Dennis, no, you were on screen last week.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I guess you're right. So, yeah, you'll have to go back to the old stream if you want to see what I look like.
See Dennis's face. All right, we talked about...
I apologize in advance.
Yeah. We talked about... We have faces for radio. We talked in the first segment about a lack of advances in cool things for handhelds and hardware and
Well,
general.
Yeah, I think we're waiting for the next big thing, as always, right?
Well...
And that's the technology world. So tell us about what you think you've got here.
Google's radar-based gesture control system.
Radar-based gesture controls. Okay.
For mobile devices. Project Soli, S-O-L-I, Soli, isn't dead yet. The project, which was announced all the way back in 2015, has popped up at the FCC, where it has been approved for use in the 57 to 64 gigahertz frequency band. Project Soli's goal is to build a tiny radar system on a chip that can be used to detect hand gestures made above a device.
Okay.
At last, my vast repertoire of rude Italian street gestures
That's right.
will once again be useful.
Yes.
So,
you can use any
more
finger
than
you
just
want.
Driving. What?
You can use any finger you want.
It's exactly right. Soli is only at the experimental stage right now, but Google usually pitches Soli as a concept control scheme for smartwatches, speakers, media players, and smartphones. Usually the gestures shown are things like tapping your thumb and index finger together for a virtual button press or rubbing two fingers together to scroll or turn a dial. The idea makes the most sense for tiny devices like a smartwatch, which don't necessarily have the space for a sizable touchscreen and lots of buttons. It could also have benefits for users with limited mobility. The FCC's decision actually lets Google use Soli at higher than the currently allowed power levels, which was apparently needed to make the chip work. Google originally wanted approval for a power level in line with the European Telecommunications Standards Institute standards, but was talked down, oddly enough, by Facebook, who is concerned about interference issues. Facebook is interested in 60 gigahertz broadband through its Terragraph project. The FCC said the decision will serve the public interest by providing for innovative device control features using touchless hand gesture technology. How sensitive is Soli? A group of researchers from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland are exploring its limitations. In a paper published last month, they show how Project Soli hardware can be used for a range of precise sensing tasks. These include counting the number of playing cards in a deck, just by... That's how sensitive it is. Measuring compass orientation, and even discerning the specific configuration of a stack of Lego blocks. The researchers suggest a number of applications for education, entertainment, and more. Soli radars could be embedded in tabletops to recognize pieces in board games, for example, or built into smart homes to monitor the presence or absence of certain items. It's not clear what use cases Google will pursue with Project Soli, but research like this shows there's a huge number of avenues to explore. So are you ready for Soli on your smartwatch? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. See, that's the kind of interestingly innovative stuff that really nobody else is doing.
True. Well, I bet there are lots of companies that are doing it that can't quite talk about it yet. And I think the only reason we're talking about this is because... Right. That it was seeking FCC approval, and it apparently was looking for some sort of variance from the typical approval. They wanted to use a chip with more power.
With more power. And they got it, apparently.
Hmm.
But I like the idea, the ability to, you know, right now with your smart speaker, you either have to speak to it or touch it to get it to do so. So let's say you want to lower the volume. If you could just wave your hand in front of it.
Yeah.
To lower or raise the volume.
Like Ross from Friends telling everybody to keep it down. Or he just pinched his fingers together and made a face gesture.
Right. And apparently this thing will do that. It'll see those gestures. And the ability to do stuff on your phone without having to actually touch it. So your phone's sitting on the table instead of, you know, you just...
You know, I think there was a phone maybe a year or two ago that allowed you to kind of wave your hand over it to either wake it up or to have it to scroll through.
The Android phone has features that, for example, will let you take a picture by swiping your hand this way across it from right to left.
Okay.
Without touching the screen.
I see.
But that is, pardon the pun, touchy and doesn't always work well.
Right, right. So this new approach with this short what do they call it? Short range radar.
Yeah.
May offer some advantages there.
And if, particularly if you can define your own gestures. So maybe I want a gesture that calls my wife or you know, whatever. There goes those rudimentary street gestures again.
Well,
but you can set up gestures that do that sort of stuff.
You set up the ASL I love you thing.
Right.
You make that to your phone.
Exactly right.
There,
right.
Do that instead.
Or
doesn't have to be rude if it's a hand gesture.
An A for Amelia or whatever,
there, yes.
Whatever it happens to be, right? But and the same thing for your watch. Right now, that's a very small screen.
That is true.
But if I can use hand gestures above it,
right?
Or if it were sensitive enough to read my face,
true.
I suppose
that would be another way to do it. I was
right.
watching a YouTube video about a guy who was trying to program an AI to read lips.
Oh,
out
how cool
of video,
is that?
And he. Turned out that it was significantly more difficult than he thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So he ended up going from a video that was a few seconds long and looking and analyzing all the frames to having to record himself making over-exaggerated mouth movements and a pre-informed script to try and train and then have it work for the rest of the two-hour movie that he was making.
Right. I have deaf friends.
Turned out to be considerably more difficult.
I have deaf friends who lip read, and they don't like me very much because I have a mustache.
Oh, yes. Well, you just need to put on that, construction cone orange lipstick, and you'll be all set.
And I look dang good in it, too, I have to tell you.
That's right. You could work it.
I could work it.
You could make that work. That's right.
Scary.
I got a Series 4 Apple Watch a couple of months ago, and I've been trying to do the input on it. And you're right. The screen is very small. But it reminds me of another small screen that I used to have in my palm. And just like the caller was saying, it brought back fond memories of my Palm 5 and how quickly I could write with the little stylus and using a simplified alphabet that Palm had called Graffiti.
Graffiti. I love Graffiti.
I could lay in down text pretty fast considering that I wasn't using a keyboard.
Right.
And it's amazing that Apple has a text input mode where they put a little grid of dots on the screen and you draw the letters you want. But the problem is my fingers still speak Graffiti. So I do the Graffiti movements for all these things thinking, oh, this is going to be great. I can whip this right out. No.
No,
not so much. They expect you to draw out actual letters with good penmanship. Well, fingermanship, I guess.
Yeah, fingermanship, yeah.
And it did not fly, but I'm having to retrain my brain, and I'm thinking, oh, how great would it be if there was some plugin or some other third-party keyboard that I could download and install into the watch that would allow me to do that.
They would let you do Graffiti, yeah.
Or if Apple just bought out whoever owns Graffiti these days and,
right.
And integrated it as an option. I would love that.
Yeah, I've gotten pretty fast at the gesture keyboard.
Yes.
On the Android where you, well, it's not gesture, it's a sliding thing.
What do they call it, swipe?
Yeah, swipe. I've gotten pretty good at that, but honestly, it's a lot easier for me to just hit the microphone icon and speak what I want to say.
Right, and I think that's what Apple really intends for people to do is to hit that microphone button and talk into it. And I will admit that is surprisingly effective and efficient. But when you're standing there in the grocery store in front of the cart and talking into your wrist and saying, "How many gallons of milk did you want me to buy?"
Right, right, exactly. Right.
I'm not quite comfortable enough with myself to not feel self-conscious about that.
Right. And that's then. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to put together a gesture set?
Oh, sure.
You could just go
macros.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. I would really look forward to that.
Right. So Soli will be a boon for a lot. And like they said, for people who have disabilities.
Sure.
If you can, so for example, if you have head movement but not hand movement. The ability to put together a series of gestures that will convey an alphabet or words, the sort of thing that Stephen Hawking did.
Sure.
Where he would look at certain things.
Eye tracking,
Yeah,
I think that whole area is where technology can be really transformational for people in terms of assisted living or assisted life.
Well, just how much voice recognition has advanced.
Oh, huge.
Right.
I mean, that has gone leaps and bounds.
It still isn't perfect, and part of that is that people slur. They mumble sometimes, mm-hmm. and their diction is not perfect.
And they may not know it.
And they may not know it, but boy, any voice recognition system will tell them pretty quickly.
I will say that there are, and we had this where I work, where we had some people that were taking final exams who were not comfortable typing on a keyboard, but still needed to do this. So we made an accommodation for them. And we were very surprised that we did not need third-party software, super expensive, generally, third-party software to do dictation. It was built into Mac OS X.
Yep.
We were able to put them in front of Microsoft Word, turn on dictation. We got them a headset so they could have a really good mic, and they were able to lay down what they needed and then submit that for their final, for all the written pieces.
Right.
And it was really, really impressive to see the technology bend to fit that particular student's need.
Yeah, we did much the same thing for a couple of students with Chromebooks.
And it went even further. A professor who teaches in foreign languages needed to be able to lay down things. He was writing a book in German. And I said, well, I think if you set the system language of the Mac to German and turn on dictation, you can then dictate in German and it determines what you're saying in German and lays it down on the paper in German.
Yep.
So it's not just an English thing. It's really available in many different languages, and it's almost just as cool to see it laid down in a different language.
Chrome, the Google Drive has that. So if you go into Docs, you can turn on voice recognition, voice dictation, I think they call it.
My kids have used that from time to time. They are in a school district
where
Chromebooks are available, and they've used that from time to time to lay things down. Although they are, you know, because they are motivated to talk with their friends, they become very good at typing very quickly at an early age.
Right.
So it's not as big an issue for them, but it's nice to know that those things are there. And that's all great for the input side. For the output side, I think things like the earphones that we're seeing, they're getting smaller all the time. The hearing aids that are able to pair with your cell phone these days, where the sound doesn't come out of the speaker on the cell phone, it comes out in your hearing aids, is really neat. There's a company locally here in Rochester called Vuzix, V-U-Z-I-X, that makes industrial, augmented reality, but they supply information into your line of sight so that you can use it while your hands are busy.
Yep. It's very cool. It's a very cool company, very cool product, Vuzix. And those are the things that we're seeing that are truly innovative. They're not your typical run-of-the-mill, how can we write an app for the phone? It's how can we do what people need done, whatever the technology is and whatever the form factor is, and then they build it.
How can we solve a problem, or how can we introduce an opportunity?
Right, here? As opposed to how can we solve a problem with X, with the phone?
Right.
Right? This is how do we solve the problem. And if it turns out it doesn't use a phone, but it uses a pair of, like, glasses.
Sure.
Yeah, or air quotes. Whatever. Right, Who cares? That's how you solve the problem.
That's right. And when you can supply the information to people, I still say that the people who can make the glasses that will immediately do facial recognition of the people that you stand in front of.
Oh, Lord, I need that.
And supply you with the name that floats over their head.
I need that.
Whoever can get that chestnut cracked is going to be the next trillion-dollar company.
Yep, I am a nomic. It is an inability to remember nouns and particular proper names.
Mm-hmm.
So I can say, Dennis, how are you today? Blah, 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 blah. And 2 minutes later, I can't remember your name. It's just gone out of my head.
Right.
Now, they say that's either an early sign of Alzheimer's or a form of dyslexia. I've had it my entire life, so I'm betting on the dyslexia part.
Okay.
But the point is, all through college, I would, particularly if you're not in the right context. So if I know you and I see you suddenly at, say, Wegmans, I don't know you. My brain cannot come up with your name.
You recognize that I might be familiar.
Right.
The face
I know
is familiar, but forgot the name.
Right. And even if I know that person really well, their name is just not in my head. And my friend Jimmy Solanowski, God love him, we used to work in the same theater company at Nazareth College. So we would often walk the halls together and we'd see people come along and Jimmy would whisper in my ear, that's Nancy or that's Tom or that's McCrina or that's, you know, whoever it is.
And he was your Smithers to Mr. Burns.
He was my Google Glasses.
Yes.
Yeah, facial recognition of people. God love him for that because it's not It's not that I'm not interested in the person. It's not that I don't like them. I just, the name is gone and I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Right. And if I had, and so now that Selenowski lives in Rhode Island or wherever the hell he lives, it would be nice to have Google Glasses be my Selenowski.
That's true. Yeah. And if they can get the cameras small enough and keep them low power and somehow it becomes socially acceptable. To wear those?
Well, that's
like,
the problem.
You only know my name because you're wearing those glasses.
Right. Well, but if you could put a Google Glass thing on these glasses, I mean, I wear glasses anyway.
Sure, it's kind of aftermarket.
Right, so if there was just a little thing you could add on, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you know what has helped? Excuse me. Because I just switched jobs. And, you know, like you, I was very terrible at remembering names.
Sure.
But I've had, almost 2 years of hearing these voices on the radio through my job. You know, calling out to different drivers and the names, that now that I'm in dispatch, people are surprised because of just I can call out their names.
Right.
And I it's like, boy, normally I would have sucked at that.
Right.
I mean, because I was terrible. Like you come up to a person, you know them darn well, and it's like, that's where my wife will sit there at times, will come up to somebody, and I can't remember their names. You go, oh, hi, I'm Sandy. And they'll introduce themselves.
Yeah, Elaine will do the same thing. And it has nothing to do with how well I know the person. My oldest friend in the world, Louis M. Fico. We were walking through, this how long ago? This was Midtown Plaza.
Whoa.
And a person that I knew came up, and I said, hi, Mary. This is my friend. I've known him since I was 4, and he lives 2 doors away from me.
And
his sister's name is Margaret, and his parents' names are... And I just couldn't... And, of course, being that Lou is my best friend in the whole world, he was not going to help me.
Yeah, he was going to leave you hanging.
He's going to make you sweat it.
More entertaining that way.
Yeah. Watch you sweat.
He just pulls out from behind his back a tin of popcorn and just starts eating.
He's smiling. Just watching the show.
This is going to be great.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller, and I know his name, I think, is Tom from Irondequoit, New York. Tom, what's up?
Hi. Something's got me a little bit baffled. When I send an email to a Roadrunner address from my Windows 10 desktop, she never receives it, okay? And I never get one of those, what is that, mailer daemon reject notices?
Sure.
Never receive one of those either. If I send her an email from my iPad, there's no problem. She receives it.
Okay.
Is it the same Roadrunner account on the iPad?
Yeah, I triple check the addresses.
Okay, so you're sending from your side, and is the recipient also a Roadrunner user, or is it somebody else?
Yeah, when you send it from the iPad,
I don't have Roadrunner.
No, when you send from the iPad, what account are you using?
What account?
What
provider are you using to send mail? It's not Roadrunner. Who is it?
Oh, it's through Frontier.
Okay, and when you send from your Windows desktop, are you also using Frontier?
That's Frontier, yes.
We're thinking.
You know, now I don't know if this makes a difference. A long time ago, the person who I sent it to, her Facebook account was hacked, and it got into my Facebook account, and I got hacked, and that was Facebook like closed it down, and for a day. And now I don't know if that makes a difference at all or not, but
that's probably separate.
Yeah, but I just thought I'd throw that into you.
Right.
But I mean, it's got, you know.
Which email program are you using on your computer?
Right now I'm using the Frontier Mail because I've been meaning to switch over to the Windows 10 Mail, but I had problems transferring over my contact list.
Sure. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you tried... The Frontier Mail is basically a website, right?
Yeah, you go on there, and I guess it's through Yahoo Mail.
Right. So do me a favor. Try sending from your iPad through that Frontier Mail Yahoo interface.
Say that again, please.
So instead of whatever program you're running for mail on the iPad...
Yes.
In your Safari browser,
yep.
open up the same website you use on your desktop.
Oh, you mean if on my iPad?
Yes.
Okay.
And send her an email from there.
Okay. Okay, on my iPad using the Yahoo Mail.
Right. If that also fails, then we know the problem is either that your friend's email is rejecting Frontier Mail generally.
Oh, I see.
Or there's something wrong with that address on Frontier.
Okay, would it be on her end?
Well, it might be. It might be that you say you've checked the two addresses against each other, but what I often find out is that sometimes people have transposed a letter or they put in a comma instead of a period,
right.
And it's very hard to see on most fonts that people use on their systems.
And the iPad stores.
That was one of the first things I checked.
iPad stores its own collection of email addresses on itself in the app called Contacts. And that is probably not connected to the web version of the mail that you're using.
Right. So the other thing to try is have your friend send you an email and then reply to it and see if that gets through. Just hit reply.
Okay. Send her an email through my iPad. Tell her to reply to me. That happened, I think, and I can't remember if her reply was on my Windows.
Right. Well, test that.
Try that again. Okay.
Well, have her send an email to your Frontier email and open it up on your desktop.
Okay.
And see if you then reply to it and see if she gets it.
Gets the reply.
If she does, then the problem still, although you've looked a million times, the problem is still that you've got her address somehow screwed up. Also have her look in her spam folder or junk folder to see if Roadrunner is junking your email from Frontier.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Can I ask you one other quick question?
Very quick. We're almost done.
Okay, I have an old iPad, okay, and they have that built-in obsolescence where I can't get the latest operating system.
Okay.
And I was looking at Chromebooks, and you recommend Chromebooks from listening to you in the past.
We like Chromebooks, yes.
Yes, but I see there's a big variation in prices. Is that just on, like, memory and...
Usually it's on screen size and capabilities, whether or not it's a touch screen, storage size, how nice the keyboard is to type on.
Okay. Right.
If you don't need a touch screen and you don't need to run Android apps, et cetera, then you can get away for $200. If you need all of those things, you could be $400, $600, $700.
Hey, thank you for your help. You guys are great.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. Have fun. All right, we're going to this first hour is done. The first hour of 2019 is done. But we're going to take a second hour, and we're going to have plenty of fun. So just hang on. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. This is Soundbites, and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported through your generosity, Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour. Not only the longest running computer show in the known universe, but the first show of 2019.
That's right.
2019.
And we're coming up very quickly.
You're old.
I spent my entire childhood wondering what the world would be like after the year 2000.
Well, Blade Runner
and
took
now we're
place
here.
In 2019.
And so. We're like nearly one-fifth over with the 2000s.
Right. Yeah, and But what I was going to say, we're getting very close to our anniversary.
That's true.
Well, it's September, but yes.
Yeah, but I mean...
It's going to come fast.
It's going to come fast.
Every year a little faster, right?
Yeah.
Every year a little faster, and that'll be our 30th.
Wonderful.
That'll be our 30th anniversary. Heralding headlong into our 30th year on the air.
30 years doing this shit.
Yep. This is what we do.
It's so fun.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's why we do it.
That's why we come in and do it.
It is fun. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it. There's no point otherwise. Yep. All right, we're going to go to the phones, and our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon. If you want to have a discussion about the wall, I'll be glad today, but maybe you close your mic.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, I'm making preparations to cut the cord for television watching.
Sure.
Toward that end, I've got a Plex server installed on a Ubuntu 18.04 machine. By the way, if anybody's thinking, go back to 1604. 1804 is a pain. But anyways.
I'm running 1804, and there are some quirks.
Yeah, that's one mild word for it. But anyways, I'm using the clients for like an iPhone and the web client. You go at the server with on your computer from another computer on the network, so fine. But the Roku box client for that kind of sucks. Are you aware of any third-party Roku clients for Plex?
No, I am not. Roku is proprietary, and I don't know anybody who's broken that code. What don't you like about the Roku client?
Well, it's you can't very easily schedule recordings on it. It's just very clunky and hard to use.
Yeah, no, you've got it within Roku and the other services. Usually, now, like I use Sling. Sling has, you can have a DVR or storage up there and record programs.
Oh, I've got plenty of storage on this machine, 6 terabyte hard drive and a radio.
Yeah, but no, what I'm saying, though, it's within the services like Sling or the others. That's another service that they offer that you pay for. It's very minimal. Like, I think it's like $5 a month. And you...
For example, on the Apple client and the web-based client, there's a guide just like you would expect on Brand X's DVR box that you get from the local big boys. You get a nice guide and everything like that that you can go out several days to pick out what you want to record, watch, or whatever. But the client for the Roku hardware is missing all of that. That's why I'm looking for an alternative.
Oh, in the actual Roku part.
Yeah, in the Roku, if you go, you set your TV to watch your Roku, open the Plex app, and the features of the Plex app, such as the guide and so forth, are sadly lacking in comparison to the other interfaces that I've been able to try.
Oh, yeah. I don't know of any, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know
of any third-party ones. I use Plex on an Apple TV, but not on a Roku.
Right. I haven't used Plex on the Roku.
We are actively Googling here for you, but I don't think we've come up with anything.
I tried that. I ain't found nothing.
Yeah. Well, we confirm the nothing that you have found.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, that'll be the easiest call you had all day, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. So thanks for that.
Well, it's always painful to us when there's an issue like that.
But if somebody else calls and has a great answer, we'll be sure to log that and make sure to listen.
Yeah, I'll be listening for the rest of your show.
Wonderful.
I was just wondering if you knew of any alternative, because the scheduling on this is really bad. Sure, I could go to my computer, log into the server via web browser on the computer, do what I want there, but that's not how I want to watch TV.
Right.
Hmm.
No, I get it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, thanks. Have a good day.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. You too.
By the way, I'll be glad to have a discussion about the wall.
No, you won't. Thanks, Bob. Bye bye. The Plex is just one of the many companies that will help you cut the cord. And as long as your network interface, your internet connection is fast enough, cutting the cord is something more and more people are doing.
Right.
And it frees up a lot of
a lot of people. They can schedule things differently. They can add things that you don't normally get on your cable system. You can do just a bunch of stuff. Dave cut the cord a while ago.
Coming up on over three years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That long?
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. And I haven't missed it one bit.
Yeah.
I mean.
And what did you used to pay for cable?
It was, matter of fact, that's what drove me to it, was the bill was going up, and because I just had, you know, the one box.
Yeah.
The one box, and that was going up to $98.
A month?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And now
for one box.
Yeah, for one box. And if, oh, I wanted, you know, the higher channels on it, I had to get additional boxes.
Right.
And that's what turned, you know, and it's like, yeah, no. So that's when I started doing the research on cutting the cord. And like I said, and we've had this discussion before, I sat down and for over a month went through and listed the various programs and what station they were on.
Okay.
So I had this list of programs that I like.
You're doing your homework. That's good.
And then I went back and to the various companies, packages out there like Sling and Amazon and Netflix and all these others, seeing what they offered.
Okay, matching them up.
Yeah, and it turned out that Sling was the one that I liked with the most channels that I watched. I have an antenna, you know, in my window mm-hmm. to get the local channels. Otherwise, okay. I get all the same channels that I was going to pay $98 for now. I was paying. I'm paying $29.99.
Okay, so you're down well below a third of what you were
yep.
going to pay before
mm-hmm.
to get the same content. Now, yep. What did you end up missing out on?
And the other thing, nice thing I like about it,
okay,
is I can come in. Say I get home and oh, I'm running a few minutes late, and I get in and there's a program mm-hmm. that has already started. Sling gives you the option that when you start it up, it'll give you a menu, do live or start over.
Ah.
So you can start over. So that program that you might have missed 10, whatever, even right. you could just about be at the end of it, but it was one you really wanted to catch. When you queue it up, say, yeah, start it from the beginning, and bam, it starts it right from the beginning and continues on.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. I remember.
And they have now the recording. You know, you can do a DVR system. That's another $5 a month.
Okay.
To record any programs that you want to click and say, watch, you know, record this one for me so I can view later.
Cool.
Yeah. And I mean, every channel that I possibly wanted is there and then some.
Right. Right.
Hmm. Wow. That's right. Really great. I'm glad you were able to figure that out. Is there anything you had to give up on? From your list?
Not a one.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I gained because wife enjoyed the Hallmark Channel.
Okay.
And that was kind of one of the things that we enjoyed watching that, you know, as just as I was getting ready, you know, hemming and hawing, all of a sudden they Sling announced, oh, we now have the this package. It included the Hallmark channels and a couple others, a DIY, which I enjoy a lot, okay. and the History Channel. So, boom, I added that in, and I say $29.99, I can handle that.
That was
compared
an easy
to
decision.
$98, and it does it. I'm not going to get a bill. Well, you know, we due to this or that, we got to raise our rates.
Sure.
No, I haven't had a rate increase in over 3 years.
Hmm.
Right.
Well, that's great.
Whereas the cable companies, you know, they got, well, they're going to charge you more. Instead of raising the rates, they say, well, we got to charge you more for the box or this or that and some excuse.
They always find a way, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Do you watch a lot of live sports?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. See,
I think that's one thing where some people get hung up on that.
Well, you can, but the thing that is, though, is you can get the sports package. Mm-hmm. There's different packages.
Plex or Sling offers those?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You can Sling get does, all different. Yeah. You can, excuse me, get a lot of different, say, Hispanic channels if okay. you wanted those. I mean, they've got what they call either the blue group or the orange group, and it shows you the different channels that are in it, and then you can add additional packages on.
Oh, okay. I'm firing up my web browser here to learn more about this.
Yeah, for $25 a month, you can pick either orange or blue, but for $40 a month, you get both.
Okay.
Now, there's a significant overlap
yeah.
between the two, but it does give you then, you know, whatever the one thing or two things you may be missing are they worth another $15 a month to you?
Right, right. So, yeah, I'm looking at the difference between these.
Right.
Okay. I see that one, I would say, has more channels related to kids-related stuff.
Yeah, they got all different packages.
And then the other channels are more adult-focused.
Right, right.
Fewer kid things. Okay, interesting.
I've also been looking at Google TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a couple of others. And, boy, it is hard to pick.
Yeah, it is.
Hmm.
You know, the thing that I tell people all the time is start a log.
Yeah.
What do you watch?
Right, like, yeah, like Dave said he did.
And the other thing, folks, just don't do it for a week. And especially during the seasons,
mm-hmm.
you got to watch it because you got to, you know, some programs are nowadays, before they used to go start in September and go on until, say, April or May.
Right.
Nowadays, most series programs only go half a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other program takes over, say, in January. So you got to sit there and, like I say, try to remember the various programs that you used to, you know, that you might not have seen for eight months ago. So you got to kind of do it. Like I said, I did over 2 months.
Okay.
I did over 2 months of, and maybe 2 months plus between, and I did it right around the holidays because a lot of the programs, you know, it was like Thanksgiving on into, say, February, part of February, because a lot of them were just wrapping up the season,
sure.
and then come, you know, January, they were starting back up.
Right.
So, or the new ones were starting up, so I could make my list.
And for an extra $5 a month, you get cloud DVR.
Yeah. Mm,
okay. So that no matter where you are, you can catch
record
up on
yeah, I mean, I can watch it. Like I mean,
stuff,
I've
so
even
nice.
Got the app on my phone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Sling app on my phone, and I can sit there and watch programs
wow.
if I wanted to.
Wow. Right. It's that. I think that market...
And Google
that,
is
those
doing
products
it.
Have really
Everybody's
grown in the
Everybody,
last,
yeah.
what, 5 years or so?
Hulu does it. Everybody does it. And the prices are slightly different, and the features are slightly different, and the channels are slightly different.
Yep.
But if you do your research and you mm-hmm. spend a little bit of time at it, you'll get exactly what you want at a decent price.
It yeah. reminds me of, AT&T used to be the only game in town for your telephone
right.
at your house. And now you've got so many different options in the 90s for long distance and for other things. So,
well, that's what's making me wonder, because now Greenlight upped the ante as far as now offering 500 megahertz for $50 of megabits. Oh, what?
Yeah.
What Spectrum going to do? Because there's no reason that they can't crank it up even more.
Yeah, as long as your modem in your house will support it, then
right.
I think you can
well,
get away with that.
Well, Spectrum has a couple of problems, one of which is old hardware.
Sure. They've got
Not
a lot of houses.
Not just in people's homes, but also at their head ends.
Uh-huh.
And they have to do a lot of, it costs a lot of money, but they'd have to do a lot of replacing to get that 500 megabit throughput.
Yeah.
For that, so I'm sure they'll have to do it. I mean, with Greenlight doing it, they're going to have to up the ante, but it's going to cost them money.
But even if they could double it, you know, go from say up
300.
Greenlight's doing 500, so they do 250. It's still more than what you're getting now.
Right.
Right. That's true.
Right.
What I would like to see is some broader fiber-to-the-home options here in town. And I know Greenlight is working as quickly as they can.
He is, as a matter of fact, expanding, adding more crews and everything else, and trying to he's headed on into Greece.
Yep.
Still working in Irondequoit. And,
I started
people,
in Webster.
They need people to sign up.
I started a Nextdoor group for my neighborhood. And
nice.
I gave them the link, and I said, look, if you're in this neighborhood, let's all go in. If you don't like whoever your provider is today, whether it's the phone company or the cable company,
right?
Come and sign up here. It doesn't cost you anything. Just tell them that you're definitely interested in having more options.
That's what I tried to do with my neighborhood watch group.
Okay.
I should say my wife did. And trying to get folks, you know, we're trying to tell them it doesn't cost anything to sign up, but it does offer, you know, great speeds
yeah.
for a lot less.
Well, and when you think about someday when you might need to sell your home for whatever reason, if a new prospective young family is coming in, they're mm-hmm. going. This is one of the things that they might
it's
consider.
It's a selling feature, yeah.
Especially
well,
if they're,
and
you know,
we're seeing
technically
that already.
Oriented.
The people who bought the house next door to us.
Yeah.
one of the things that one of the first questions they asked is, can I get fiber?
Right. Yeah, I'm surprised that that's not a checkbox on Zillow or whoever when you go to look at your websites. You know, is high speed internet available?
They must have been sad when they said no. And they go, why? Because it's already here.
That's right.
It's not coming. It's here.
Well, I had a guy. You, one of the things you could do, I don't know if you still can, is you could on the website, Greenlight would send you door hangers and stuff like that to hand out.
Canvas your neighborhood.
I opened the door to get my mail. There was a guy coming up my porch steps, and he said, you know, I want to give you this. And I looked at it and I said, you're a little behind.
Good news. You can hand that on to someone else.
He said, well, I said, where do you live? He said, three doors down that way. I said, I've had Greenlight for a year and a half. We have it here. What? He ran. He left off my porch. He didn't even touch the steps.
Yes.
And headed for home.
His shirt was not touching his back. He
was
ran away.
Definitely getting on the phone or going to the website and say, I want it.
There was a pussy-shaped cloud of dust where the man used to be at my step.
It was a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. One second he was there, the next there was this little cloud of dust and speed lines going off to his house.
Neat.
He was very excited, I'm sure.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller patiently waiting on the line is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I don't know how you know it's patiently, but...
We know you, Steve.
We want to believe.
Okay. I have, I'm going to say approximately 2000, year 2000, I bought a program called Firehand Ember. It's a photo viewer... editor type of programs, obviously Windows XP. I absolutely love it. I like it better than anything I have found, even today. Back then, I think it cost me $20, so now it would probably be a couple hundred. But the person who developed it passed away, I think, like 2003, passed away. I found a site, askleo.com.
Sure.
Yep.
/firehand-ember, where he talks about, he used to work with the, Matt Smith. And I'm wondering, my Windows 10 has got to a point where even in compatibility mode, I can't run the program.
Right.
Can I legally have someone look at it to try to update it to Windows 10? And he did make a comment here about that he thinks the source code is lost. If I've got the program, don't I have the source code?
Short answer, no. You have a binary that was compiled from the source code.
Right.
But technically you could theoretically decompile it, but that's not for the faint of heart. And if you're not comfortable in software development, I can't recommend that.
Right.
I do see that the Askleo site did recommend a replacement called FastStone.
Yeah, I've tried it. It's better than most of the things. It's closer than what I can find now.
Okay.
So that's not bad. I was thinking that maybe hire some person, some brainiac student at RIT or something to update it. But if I can't do it legally,
all right,
well,
I'm going to ask.
You can certainly reverse engineer it. That's legal.
Let's talk about it this way, Steve. What are the features of this software that you really like?
The editing is extremely quick. It doesn't go out looking for things. It lets me manually put them in there. When I click on an image, it fills the screen automatically, and even if it's like 87% and it's a quick click,
Okay. Close
it up to 100%.
Tell me about the editing that you do. What does editing mean to you?
I use it as a viewer. It's a very handy viewer.
Okay.
The editing is if the colors are off with color bats, it's got the color, what do I want to call it?
You can do color correction.
Yes. So if I look down at the, it's got a tone distribution where it'll automatically do it. Grayscale, sharpen, smooth, resize. If I go under color correction, I get brightness, contrast, gamma, tint, saturation, plus the RGB color, all on sliders.
Okay.
It's extremely easy to use.
How many photos do you deal with?
Probably.
Like if you had to say to the nearest. To the nearest. I'm sorry.
But I'm in there all the time editing. So I get a photo and I don't like the balance or I don't like something else.
Okay, so are we talking tens of thousands of photos or fewer or more?
Well, I've done tens of thousands.
Okay.
I don't do that. Obviously, that's not a day's work. It'll also take batch. In other words, I can select 10 photos and do the exact same thing at the same time to all of them. Like if I get them all and they've all got a green tint, well, I can remove the green tint from all 10 simultaneously.
Oh, I see. You can tell it what to do on one and then have it extend that, batch it to the rest.
Have you looked at a program called Irfan View?
Yes.
That doesn't do what you need.
Well, it's not as easy to use. You know, obviously I've been using this for like 2 decades now.
Right.
I'm very comfortable with it. Comfortable enough that I would pay someone to try to upgrade it to Windows 10.
Right. But unless you have the source code, they're essentially reverse engineering it, and that is not cheap.
Okay.
And as Dennis said, you don't get the source code. What you get is a compiled version of the source code.
Okay.
And so it's not the source code. You can kind of...
Is there still Photoshop Elements?
Yeah. Available?
That might be something. And the skills you learn with Photoshop Elements would be transferable to other tools later on. I'm trying to just mentally think of other sound, audio editing, not audio editing.
Video editing.
Photo editing photo tools editing. That I've used
the
in the past.
The GIMP.
Sure, there's always that.
Image manipulation program.
Are you opposed, Steve, to pushing photos to the cloud and letting an online service supply you with the software?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, basically, I don't own the photos, so I'm downloading them, obviously illegal, or I believe legally downloading them. Some people send me, I'll get a thumb drive from a student or person, and it'll have 8,000 photos on it that he wants me to go through and fix up. And I could use GIMP, I can use Photoshop, but all those do much harder to do use, where this program is just, I'm not going into tweaking this layer and moving another layer over here. I'm taking the whole photo and applying these controls over it, which works very well. Everybody seems to be, there's obviously some photos you just can't fix.
Sure.
Right.
But I really like this program.
Yeah, I would take a look at Photoshop Elements from Adobe. I think it's probably about the scale and probably in the price bracket that would be reasonable. Trying to update an older binary to make it compatible. There's a whole bunch of issues there. If you don't have the source code, that's almost a non-starter.
I sort of got not understanding why, but I got that when Leo said he couldn't do it with the source code. And I'm saying, well, I've got the program right in front of me. I kind of figured they were different.
Yeah.
If he couldn't do it, I certainly. He certainly has the program.
Right. It's like taking a glass of orange juice and saying, I want to grow an orange tree from this. You don't have any of the seeds. You don't have what you need in order to get what you want.
You just
have the result of what you get when you have an orange tree.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Steve. I wish we could help you.
So do I.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Wurster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. This is Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Still?
Yep.
Unbelievable.
It.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. For 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Suggestion for the gentleman who was looking for the photo editor type viewer thing.
Yep. Please.
I use a program that I bought called Thumbs Plus.
Okay.
And it is pretty much what he's looking for. It's a pretty simple interface. It does all the photo editing you need, including all the color adjustments, and a lot of that stuff's all built into it. And like I said, it's a beautiful image viewer.
Yeah.
Very slick interface. And you can buy a standard license for like $42. It's not outrageous.
Interesting.
And it has a trial period, so you can try it out before he buys it.
That's the important part.
Yeah, it has a trial period. That's what I did, and I just fell in love with the program.
Right. Runs on Windows 10, 32-bit and 64-bit.
And
nice.
The interface is very similar to what I'll call the slides of the other tool that he was using.
Right. Looks like a pretty decent little program. Thumbs up, all one word.
What a nice recommendation.
Thumbs plus.
Thumbs plus.
Yeah.
Thumbs plus.
Right. Sirius.com. Sirius with a C.
Right. Sirius.com. C-E-R-I-O-U-S. So, Steve, I know you're still listening.
And so, that's the place to go. And we'll make sure to get that link in the show notes, won't we?
Also, apparently, thumbsplus.com.
Kind of not computer-related, but electronics-related.
We'll do our best.
And maybe Dave might have a clue. Maybe. Do you have a clue how to get static out of electronics like volume knobs and stuff like that?
Static?
Yeah.
You know, that carbon buildup that you get and something doesn't get...
There is. If you go to... what's the name? It's on the corner of Goodman and Clinton. There's a place there.
Goldcrest.
Thank you. Brain fart. He has
contact
spray.
Cleaner.
Yeah, it's a contact spray that you can use safely on stuff to flush off, you know, carbon buildup or whatever residue.
Okay. Yeah, because I have a headphone amp for my bass that I use a lot. And I went through a period of severe arthritis in my wrist, and I couldn't play at all for many, 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 many months. And I went to use it last night, and it was just all full of static and all the controls. So, all right, so contact spray and Goldcrest.
Yes,
sir. Goldcrest Electronics, just ask him about the static spray for volume knobs. You'll be fine.
Yep, they'll know exactly what you mean.
See? Not even a computer question. You guys had an answer.
We'll make up any answer. We don't care.
Well, I bet you it's not made up. So, but thank you.
Well, you'll find out when you get there.
Thank you guys so much. Yep. I appreciate it.
Yep. Have fun.
Have a good one.
Bye bye. Yeah, that's the beauty. See, we've performed the very first goal of tech support.
Yes.
Get them off the line. Get them to somebody else.
Well. Sometimes that's
problem.
The best you can do.
Yeah.
It's not about can you solve their problems, but how do they feel after they're done talking with you? You want them to feel great.
You want them to feel
even
great.
Even if you don't know the answer.
That's right. I don't know the answer, but you're darn good looking and sexy to boot.
But that contact cleaner, that is the stuff to get for that particular situation.
Yep.
Luckily, he had a question that we knew the answer to.
Right.
So who's next?
our friend Jason from Altoona, PA.
Nice.
Hi there.
Hello. This is you.
How are things in Altoona?
Oh, not too bad. How about you guys?
We're good. Thanks. What's up?
For the gentleman who was calling about the old program, depending on how old of an OS he needs for that and how new his system is, another option might be a virtual machine with an older version of Windows that would allow him just to run the program he was looking for.
You know, that's true. You that's could possible, run a modern certainly. OS and then run a tool like VMware or something else that could run a window, and inside it a second pretend computer lives inside that window that could be whatever OS you can safely emulate, and then you could run your older software foreseeably for a long time into the future. That's another option, especially if you're really married to all the knowledge that you've gained and all the skills and tips that you've learned for a particular piece of software. That is a way to go on.
Sometimes if you're just looking for productivity, the muscle memory of certain command codes just might make it worth it.
That's true.
Sure. And if you can find a version of, say, Windows XP or Windows 7 that you can load into a virtual machine, assuming you've got enough memory and enough processor and yada, yada, yada.
Well, you've got to make sure the VM is big enough to, well, either go see a folder outside of itself as a share in order to get to the photos, or that the VM is big enough to store all those photos along with it internally.
Right.
But either way, yeah, I'd say
it's not a bad idea at all. I've been doing a lot of, I've probably got 20 different operating systems running in my VMs.
Okay.
Not all at once, of course.
Sure.
And my machine is not quite that beefy.
Well.
But I just installed. Anyway, are we done with your question?
Well, I was going to say, isn't there also an Amazon service where you can spin up a instance of Windows?
AWS.
Something like that?
Yeah. You can do that. It's not terribly expensive.
That way you wouldn't have to run it on your own hardware. But it is the kind of thing where if you're not going to have the thing yourself, you might have to pay rent on somebody else's. So
right, but depending on how often he needs it, it might be a good trade-off for him.
Sure.
Too.
Yeah, it's worth doing the math on that to see how it works out.
That's exactly right. It's not a bad thought.
Welcome to the new year, guys, and looking forward to many years to go.
Good.
Thanks, you too. Have fun down there in Altoona. We'll see you soon.
As soon as the snow thaws.
Yep. Bye-bye.
See ya.
I just loaded an operating system called Haiku.
Okay, what is Haiku
into a VM.
Good for?
It's a general purpose. It's not based on Linux. It's not based on Windows. Not based on anything. It's its own thing, and it's registered. And I don't know where they all are, but the corporation is registered here in Rochester.
Okay, it says based on BOS.
It's based on BOS using their own.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, no kidding. It's pretty cool. It's still, I think, the beta.
Okay.
Which is why I'm running it in VM and not anything.
Well, it's always neat to keep track of, you know, is 2019, Nick, going to be the year of Linux on the desktop? I think everybody wants to know.
I think everybody wants to know that. And in fact, it is already. This is a Linux desktop.
Okay. So you would say the year of Linux on the desktop is whenever the Chrome OS became mainstream.
Yes.
Okay. So it's already happened.
Although if they go with, Fuchsia,
right,
that uses an entirely different kernel whose name has now escaped me, but it will not be Linux anymore.
Right. Let's see. I was reading all about that microkernel called Zircon.
Zircon, there it is.
Is that the one you were thinking of?
Okay. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Cool.
I'm looking forward to playing with that as well, in a VM to start with.
Of course.
But this Haiku is pretty cool stuff. I'm actually very impressed. And it is Rochester. It's registered in Rochester. I don't know where the people are.
Hmm.
There's no contact information.
Interesting.
As such, but the company is registered here in Rochester, and so everybody should follow it at the very least.
Okay, where should they go to learn more?
Haiku-os.org.
Okay, Haiku.
Haiku.
Neat.
As in the 17 syllable
poetry.
Poem.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Back to the phones. It's Steve from Greece. Perhaps the same one. Steve?
It is the same one.
It is the same one.
You're lucky. A couple of things for them. Where I said, I did try setting up a virtual box.
Yeah.
It ran fine, but the virtual box is so small that, I couldn't get the virtual box full screen.
Right, right, right. One of the problems with any running any virtual machine on your system, for those of you who don't know, a virtual machine is essentially a machine inside your regular machine. So you open up a window and you're now running Windows 7 or Linux or something else inside that window. The problem is, unless you've got an awful lot of RAM and an awful lot of disk space, you can't dedicate an awful lot of RAM or an awful lot of disk space to that VM.
And it just doesn't run very well.
So you want at least, you know, if you've got an 8-gig machine, you can put 4 gig in it of RAM. You want to be able to dedicate 16 gig or so to your video, particularly for the stuff Steve wants to do. You might want even more. Or 16 meg, rather. If you don't have a large machine and a fast and powerful machine to run it on, you can't do much with it. You know, for example, my home machine is 8 cores and 16 gig of RAM, so I can, put together a 4-core, 8-gig VM,
right,
and still have plenty of oomph in my regular machine.
Right.
But, in my laptop, it's only 8 gig and only 4 cores, so I can only, really dedicate about half of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with a smaller, less powerful thing. But you're right. If you're going to run VMs, if your purpose is to run VMs, then you want a lot of RAM, a lot of cores, and a lot of disk space. And most machines just don't have enough.
Yeah. And I missed the name of that cloud program he said. I think he said it once, and I missed it. The last caller. I think he's...
Thumbs Plus?
No, I got that one. I got the Thumbs Plus that he mentioned, I believe, another online... you guys are going to make
Jason from Altoona talked about spinning up something called AWS.
AWS.
Now, what that is the Amazon Web Services. You can actually buy from them essentially an operating system. So you can go to Amazon Web Services and say, "I want a Windows machine in the web, in the internet," and you can buy it from them and pay them monthly, and then you pay per processor and you pay per how much RAM and you pay per usage.
Okay.
So you can say, "I want to use this much RAM and this much processing power." And then you use it for 10 hours a month, and you pay for 10 hours a month.
Okay.
So, but that's on Amazon's web services, and you can set that up at any time and run it through your web browser essentially anywhere on Earth.
Is that through ECC, Elastic Compute Cloud?
Yeah.
Is that how they do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And can you, this is a XP program. Can I run an XP program through...
Have to provide the operating system, but you can run anything you want.
I think you can do Windows 7 and Windows 8 and probably stuff that's fresher than that. I don't know if they go all the way back to Windows XP, but that would be a great question for them to answer.
I've had no problems running it on 7. It's just when I got into 10. I'm running it fine on one machine. Compatibility mode works great. In another Windows 10 machine, it does not work.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can read all about their sets of products.
Right.
And they do an astonishing number of things. The thing you're really looking for is EC. You're right. EC2 is the thing you want. And that's Elastic Computing Cloud. So it's EC2. So it's if you go to aws.amazon.com, and look under products, one of the things you'll see is EC2 servers.
Is it a number 2 or the word 2?
The number 2, EC and the number 2.
Okay.
Under featured services, EC2. Under product, go to aws.amazon.com.
Right.
Click on products, and you'll see a whole list. And in the center column, the first one under featured services is Amazon EC2, virtual servers in the cloud.
You guys come up with... You guys and your listeners come up with some fantastic stuff.
There you go. Good luck.
Thank you again, guys.
Yep.
Good luck with that.
Yep. Like I said, I don't know what it costs. I haven't looked into their costs in decades, but it really is not terribly expensive, depending on what it is you want to do.
Right. Yeah, you know, you've got to figure out if you're not interested in learning a new piece of software, how many dollars is that worth to you?
Right, right, exactly. And if he was willing to pay somebody to recreate the product, right, he probably is willing to pay a few bucks for it one
right
way or the other.
And that's worth investigating.
Exactly. But yeah. So yeah, I've run amazing numbers. I just, half of them I don't run anymore, but I've got a bunch of VMs. And I've been playing with this Haiku, and like I said, it's a free software. It's not quite ready for prime time. But
you remind
it
me of a Weird Al Yankovic, where all about the Pentiums from so long ago.
Right.
He says he's tried every operating system, gave props to some, and others he dissed them.
Right. But this is it's Beta 1, is Haiku Beta 1. And if the folks, if you're listening, or if you're one of the people who knows the folks who write Haiku, tell them I'm quite impressed. It's a pretty nice little. It doesn't do everything yet. It's still beta.
Well, it's baby software. Right?
But it's pretty cool stuff, and I'm very impressed. And I'm looking forward to the real working version. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it looks like they're getting really close to their fundraising goal too.
So if you've
project,
if you're interested in helping them meet their goal in fundraising to get a new and different operating system that's registered in Rochester, New York, this is your chance to do it, haiku-os.org. Drop them a few bucks and see what they'll get. They even have the exchange rate for euros.
Wow.
Currently, a euro is worth $1.14.
Okay. Strong dollar. Wow. So you brought in a couple of 3D printed items today.
I did bring in a couple of 3D printed items. Can't show them because we don't have the cameras. But I bought myself a 3D printer for Christmas, an Ender 3, not the Pro version, just the regular version.
Okay.
And it's pretty good. I've done no tuning, so you can see there's a little bit of schmutz there.
Yeah.
And it's not perfect, but it's pretty doggone good. And what I made were a couple of maker coins just playing around.
Now, what's a maker coin?
Well, many makers have these little coins.
Okay.
With some sort of thing in them that designates them, their logo, or whatever it happens to be.
All right.
And then they
use... Is this based on the challenge coin concept?
Same idea.
Okay.
So, you know, if I go to a maker fair, I hand out my maker coin.
Right. So it's something, something that represents you.
Right, right, exactly.
Like a business card, but something that is unique to something that you made yourself.
Right, right, right. And a lot of people will, and you know, I haven't done this yet, but I could put my address on the back or my company name or whatever I wanted to do.
Okay.
But I was just playing around, and these are fairly thick and large and take time to print, a lot of more thinner and print faster, but I was just playing around. I've been playing with my 3D printer, and I'm pretty impressed. I'm slowly tuning it in.
Okay.
I'm very early days on this.
Right.
It's like when people got their first computers.
Yes.
It's like the elephant dancing. Uh-huh. It's not how well it dances. It's the fact that it dances
at all. Yeah.
Right. So I haven't gotten it to dance well yet.
Right.
But I'm pretty fascinated at the dancing it does.
That's how I felt about Wi-Fi when I first tried it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I said, this is incredible. We're networking without the wire. So what about the creation part? So did you have to design this on a computer? And what are the tools that you use to design the things before you print them?
There are about a million tools.
Okay.
Online, there are some very inexpensive, well, free and simple products. One is called Tinkercad.
Okay.
At tinkercad.com, I believe. We're about to find out. Yes. It's an Autodesk company.
Okay, Autodesk, famous for making AutoCAD.
And you sign in, you join, obviously,
mm-hmm.
And you can sign in with your Autodesk thing, or you can just sign in, you know, make a thing. And then it's very simple, but what it lets you do it sent me a security code, which I have to look at now.
Okay, and you can type that in. I'll vamp for a minute.
Thank you.
So you'd use these tools. I'm, again, trying to relate this back to something I know about. Back in ye olden days, one of the major reasons you'd get a computer is to do something called desktop publishing, where you would lay out documents or lay out brochures or pamphlets or other things and print them right at your desk through a laser printer, And then instead of having to go to a print shop, you make it happen.
Yep. All right, we'll talk more about this when we come back, but we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes.
That's the end. That's it.
Holy crow!
Can you believe that?
Holy crow, the show is over. Look,
you're done, dude.
Man, we are done.
We had so much fun.
All right, I see that we're done. I just don't want to go, man.
Well, we'll put a pause and we'll put a break in this and we'll come back to it next week.
We'll come back to it next week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I really want to thank Dennis Worcester, who ably stepped in to take over for Steve Ray, who's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. We will be back to see you next week. More of 2019 with the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.